All right, so this is where we are. Almost on the home straight, actually. These are the last three chapters now, or we're going to commence the section of the last three chapters of the prophecy of Zechariah. And this morning we're going to deal with at least most of the verses of chapters 12 and 13. You remember, the second to last section, the section on the shepherd king from chapters 9 through 11, in chapter 9 painted the great contrast between Alexander and the Lord Jesus Christ. In chapter 10, the prophet points out that whilst Christ at his first advent didn't come as the conquering king that Alexander was, he will do so at his second advent. And then chapter 11, there was a cost to the Jews for rejecting the Lord at his first advent. That cost wouldn't just be that they would be scattered from the land as the covenant between Jew and Jew was broken in that chapter, but that an idol shepherd, a worthless shepherd, would assume the governance over that nation and would persecute them for the next 1900 years. When you come to chapter 12, which is the commencement of the final section of the prophecy, you find that the punishment's not over yet. There's still more to happen. As Zechariah chapters 12 through 14 tells us, there will be yet one last conflict. And with the blessing of the papacy, the armies of Europe will descend upon the mountains of Israel. They'll take a spoil. They'll take a prey. They'll plant, in the words of Daniel chapter 11, their tabernacle between the two seas. And once and for all, at least in their ambition, address the Jewish problem. That action will put the Jewish people in a position that they've never ever been in before, facing certain destruction, at their wits' end, without hope, but of course in the perfect frame of mind for the return of the Good Shepherd. There's no doubt that when we commence chapter 12, we commence a new section in the prophecy. If you just glance at the opening words of verse 1 of Zechariah chapter 12, it tells us that this is the burden of the word of Yahweh for Israel. That's almost identical to chapter 9 verse 1, the burden of the word of Yahweh. So chapter 9 began with a burden. There's no burden in chapter 10 or chapter 11, because chapters 9 to 11 are a section. But the next burden begins in chapter 12, you see, commencing the last section of the prophecy of Zechariah. As you cast your eye perhaps across chapters 12, 13 and 14, there are a couple of key words or phrases that you've got to appreciate. We've entitled this section, The Day of Yahweh. You can see it on the screen there. Chapters 12, 13 and 14 are all the section entitled The Day of Yahweh. That's because the phrase, in that day, occurs all the way through this section. So you'll see it the first time in verse 3 of chapter 12. In that day, verse 4, in that day, verse 6, in that day, verse 8, in that day, all the way through. In fact, I think 19 times that phrase occurs in these three chapters. The second key word is the word Jerusalem. And all the way through these chapters, the word Jerusalem also occurs. In fact, 21 times, I believe. Verse 2, verse 3. Verse 5, verse 6 of chapter 12, and on through to the end of chapter 14. The day that is described, that we just mentioned, is in fact specifically defined when you come to chapter 14, verse 1. It's not just the day or in that day, it's the day of Yahweh. And therefore, putting all of these themes together, or these two great themes together, we might call this the day of Yahweh in Jerusalem. That would be the overriding caption of these three chapters. The Day of Yahweh in Jerusalem, because that's what it's all about, isn't it? That's the subject of Zechariah chapters 12 to 14. But before we consider the chapter and how it breaks down, I've got to just bring you up to speed with a little bit of background. And this background comes from Daniel chapter 11. And all I've done here is I've printed Daniel 11 verse 40 through 45 on the screen, and shown you the progress of the Gog invasion of the last days. Now, Daniel chapter 11 and verse 40 says, that at the time of the end, that is the time of the manifestation, the second advent of the Lord Jesus Christ, the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind. Now, the king of the north is a specific title that is used in the prophets, in Daniel 11 in particular, to describe the area of the ancient Seleucid Empire under the control of a foreign power. What I mean by that is, the king of the north is the king, a foreign power, who controls the area of Syria, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan. Because that was the ancient Seleucid Empire, or the portion of the Greek Empire that was controlled by a Seleucid general back shortly after the death of Alexander the Great. Now, we say that the king of the north is Russia. Well, that's true, because the last verses of Daniel chapter 11 are a complete parallel with the invasion of Ezekiel 38. But the king of the north is not Russia, because Russia comes from the north. Russia assumes the title of the king of the north only when he controls Syria, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan. Then he becomes the king of the north, that is, a latter-day Greek. At which time, he pushes at him, Daniel 11, verse 40 says. Now, the him in Daniel 11, by comparing verse 40 to verse 36 of Daniel 11, the him is the king of Constantinople of verse 36. When Constantine first moved the capital from Rome to Constantinople in 330 AD. What does that mean? It means this: what we expect to see is Russia take control of Syria through to Afghanistan, at which time he becomes the king of the north. Then he takes Turkey, at which time Europe owns the old western and eastern capitals of the Roman Empire. They were Rome and Constantinople, at which time Daniel's image stands on its two feet on those ancient historical capitals and then invades the nation of Israel. That's why it's so significant, you see, that Russia is building military bases in Syria. She's there to stay. And the fact, by the way, that Syria is not mentioned in Ezekiel 38, when I would have expected them to have been so, simply because they're Israel's most ancient enemy, would suggest to me that Syria completely loses her sovereignty and is annexed by the Russians, as opposed to Iran, for example, which is mentioned by name, or by Persia, in Ezekiel 38. So that's what's going to happen. Russia consolidates the area of the old Seleucid Empire, becomes king of the north. Then she takes Turkey and pushes at him, verse 40. Daniel 11, verse 41, many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, Edom, Moab. So the area east of the Jordan River escapes the Russian aggression. Verse 42 of Daniel 11, then he stretched forth his hand upon the countries, the land of Egypt shall not escape. The Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps, that is, vassals, controlled, invaded, and occupied. The Libyans and Ethiopians aren't just allies. They are occupied. They are conquered by Gog. That's the implication of being at his steps. And from there, he goes forth in verse 45 of Daniel 11 to plant his tabernacles between the two seas. That is, between the Dead Sea and the Mediterranean Sea, which, of course, is where the city of Jerusalem finds itself. What this means is, it appears, he comes down the coastal plain of Israel, bypasses Jerusalem, just like Alexander the Great did, and then returns back to Jerusalem because of tidings in the north and the east, just like Alexander the Great did. You see, there's the Gogian invasion. Gogian, by paralleling Ezekiel 38 with Daniel chapter 11. Now, understanding that, now this is the story of Zechariah 12 through 14. And what I've done here is I've simply broken the chapters, those three chapters, up into their component parts and then sorted them in what we believe is the chronological order of their occurrence. You'll appreciate, therefore, simply by looking at what you see on the screen, that chapter 13 doesn't happen after chapter 12, nor chapter 14 after chapter 13. These chapters are